Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Thanks again for tuning in, and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Always nice to have you along. Enjoy these opportunities to get together and talk about issues that affect us and ways that we can, more importantly, connect faith to everyday life. Ted Ross at the controls. Ted, I guess we can probably talk football, right? Because both the Packers and the Vikings won. Right?
Yeah, so, sure. Everybody's so happy.
Sure, we don't have to. Yeah, we don't have to worry about speaking, about one team or another.
No, that's all going to change on Thursday when they meet in Lambeau, though. So look out.
One of them will. Well, they do allow ties now, don't they? Though.
So, well, yeah, they did that last year. In fact,
that's right. Yeah.
So.
Let's hope not for that. That would be a little better. So,
should we escape through the movies or escape through TV today?
Sure. Well, we're going to do that. I mean, I don't know. You're probably a little more up to date on the TV and movies than I am.
Probably not as much as I used to be. Parenting will do that. It'll kind of pull you away from those things, which is a good thing.
Probably. I could probably watch sports for quite a while, though.
Sure.
I don't think my guest really, I don't know if there's any, well, of course, we're going to talk kind of about the big story of, creation, fall, and redemption, and violence is in there. So maybe sports will come in. I'm not sure. We're talking about the Twins. They definitely have fall there, I think, don't we?
Right. Again.
I don't know if there's, is there any redemption? I'm not sure of it. By the way, before we get to today's guest, should mention that we're just talking before the program that we have posted now up on our website at myfaithradio.com details for our Pastor and Clergy Appreciation Month giveaway. And we're excited about that opportunity for you to nominate your pastor for a great retreat.
Sunscape Retreats. This is in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it's an opportunity for you to we did this last year, had wonderful nominations, and so if you were with us last year and you remember that, it's just a great opportunity to really bless your pastor and their spouse with, I think it's a week away. I mean, and Sunscape's, thanks to them, taking care of really all that's involved in that. So it's a great opportunity for your pastor to experience some R&R. So I know you're a PK. Pastor father ever decide to just take a retreat away and leave you at home to manage the house?
No. I probably wouldn't like that in high school, but no, he did not do that.
Well, we're going to talk to a pastor today. In fact, Mike Cosper is one of the founding pastors of Sojourn Community Church in Louisville, Kentucky, where he serves as the pastor of worship and arts. And he's the founder of Sojourn Music and contributes regularly to the Gospel Coalition blog, where he writes about worship and culture. And he's also authored the book called Rhythms of Grace. And the new book is called The Stories We Tell. And the subtitle is How TV and Movies Long For and Echo the Truth. And we're going to talk about, the world that we are pretty influenced by when it comes to film and television. If it's true that Americans spend 5 hours average every day watching TV, that's a lot. And we spend roughly $30 billion a year on movies, so we are fully invested in this, whether we want to be or would admit it or not. So, Mike, welcome to Connecting Faith.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
I'm interested in that the fact is, I guess all of us probably are entertainment junkies to one level or another, and we would like to think, well, we maybe don't watch as much as we do, but we can all quote lines from movies, and we know all our, have favorite TV characters. And so were you just kind of a watching lots of media, film, and television, just something that you did? And so out of that, talk a little bit about the premise of the book, how it came about.
Sure. I mean, I grew up in a home. My dad is and I share the gene of that drives us to be a TV junkies. And so I grew up in a home watching a lot of TV. I was the kid that came home from school and flipped on the television and popped a bowl of popcorn and sat in front of it until I fell asleep at night. And so through that, you know, learned to love movies, learned to love television. And the premise for the book really began to evolve for me when I started to notice, you know, for instance, the fact that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan basically made the exact same movie three times in a row, and all three of them were big hits. You know, there was Joe versus the Volcano and Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail. And while the plots vary a little bit, the emotional arc of the story is identical. You can say the same thing about just about every police procedural drama that's on television. You know, the plot line's the same. There's a crime. There's a suspect. It turns out that suspect's not the right guy. They find the right suspect, and then in the last 5 minutes of the show, they save the day. And there's this you know, recurring themes. You see them over and over and over again, the same plot lines, the same stories. And started to kind of ask why, and I came convinced over time that there's something in the human heart that is asking the same questions, and that we're using stories as a way of working out those questions and working out answers to the deeper questions of who we are as people. And of course, as a Christian, I believe that the greatest answer, the answer to the questions that are really burning for us, is the gospel. And so my goal with the book was to sort of draw lines between these stories and these themes back to the story of the gospel, and to root them in that redemption narrative of creation, fall, redemption, and consummation that we see in the scriptures.
And interesting, over the last few years, that it seems like many more pastors and you know, authors have been sort of focusing on the big story. There's the entire scriptures is one big story, and you know, I think Max Lucado came out with the story a couple of years ago. And so we're maybe becoming as Christians probably a little more aware that there's kind of some major themes. So maybe just talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you mentioned just sort of quickly, it was, you know, creation, fall, redemption, consummation. But it talk a little bit more about that, maybe just to set the stage for our discussion.
Certainly, yeah. The theologians call it, you know, this idea of redemption history, and how the narrative of the Bible is a narrative that covers sort of the bookends of history in through those lenses. So God made the world, and the world was perfect, and it was sort of our, you know, it's what we imagine as a utopia. It was a perfect world, and it was good. Sin enters the world in Genesis chapter 3, and it corrupts it. And from there, sin corrupts everything, and the world is a fallen and broken place. The redemption narrative is sort of this beautiful two-part narrative, God showing up first in Abraham and through the story of Israel, and then ultimately showing up in the person of Jesus Christ, who lives a perfect life, dies in our place, and raises again a new life. And that inaugurates and moves us towards the final, you know, that redemption movement moves us towards this final movement that we all long for and hope for, usually called consummation or completion. It's this idea that a day is coming when there will be no more tears, there will be no more sorrows, everything will be made right. And it's a beautiful way to kind of think of our faith and to really sort of find ourselves as characters in the midst of this story that God is telling through his redemptive work.
You know, one of the things that I read early on in your book, and I was kind of looking back to see if I could find it again just to make sure I got it right. The book, by the way, we're talking about is The Stories We Tell, How TV and Movies Long For and Echo the Truth. But you made a statement about, you know, the fact that the world gets it wrong, that, you know, we misinterpret the story, or we, you know, it's not a complete story. And I guess I'm wondering, in light of that, you know, is there an end benefit in us trying to sort of see glimpses of the big story in film and TV? I mean, we get excited when there's maybe some truth that gets communicated and say, well, yeah, that points towards something bigger. But aren't we disappointed most of the time because, you know, they get it wrong?
Sure, sure. Well, I think there's sort of a twofold benefit to looking at the stories in the world around us. One is, you know, from an apologetic angle, there's sort of like Acts 17, where Paul immerses himself in the stories, in the religious practices, and the poetry, and the literature, and the thought of the people of Athens, and he's able to step into that world and understand it and speak the language that they know and that they understand by understanding their art, their poetry, and their stories. And then he's able to say, hey, this is what your poets are declaring. This is what you know. And it's true, but it's better than you think, because the God that you're worshiping that you think is unknown has actually revealed himself. I think we have the ability to do that with stories when we look at stories that are saying, like, hey, why is the world, you know, why is the world broken? How did it get to where it was? And we look at heroic stories where there's this sort of innate sense that someone's going to come along that's going to save the world, that's going to redeem history, whether it's Neo from The Matrix or Superman or even Spider-Man. And then, you know, this longing for a perfect world, for some kind of restoration of utopia, the fairy tales ending with this phrase, happy ever after. There's a longing for something there that's very evident in the human heart. And I think by listening to the stories that people are telling, it gives us an opportunity to go, hey, what you say there, it's true, but it's better than you thought, because this has happened. God has shown up and has revealed himself. I think the other benefit of it too, is particularly for me anyway, when I read stories that about human brokenness and tragedy and relationships, I always find ways to sort of see myself in those stories and see myself in those places, and to understand my own brokenness and my own need for community better and better.
We're going to talk more. I'm going to take a short break and come back and talk more with Mike Cosper, who is a pastor, founding pastor of Sojourn Community Church in Louisville, Kentucky. And he's authored a new book called The Stories We Tell, How TV and Movies Long For and Echo the Truth. It's published by Crossway Label. And we're going to open up phone lines, too, and just have some discussion. Maybe there's some specific stories or shows that we'll get into. I might even talk a little bit about The Church Lady. I'll remember her and all that. And we'll get some maybe concrete examples of some ways that these stories that we are so familiar with echo the truth, and how we can maybe interpret and understand those better. We'll and maybe see ourselves more in the story. All that and more coming up. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Yes, we're having a special conversation today, talking about the stories we tell, how TV and movies long for and echo the truth. And we're talking with Mike Cosper, author of this new book, one of the founding pastors of Sojourn Community Church Louisville. And he serves as the pastor of worship and arts, and so is also contributing regularly in the Gospel Coalition blog, writing about worship and culture. And you do actually address the church lady and maybe how... You know, I guess, Mike, let's talk about how Christians particularly maybe have approached the world of film and TV, because, you know, we tend to be critics and we're not particularly portrayed very well in TV and movies.
Sure, sure. Well, I think for a long time, the primary response to pop culture by Christians has been one of fear, and so that's where that church lady persona kind of comes from. We're afraid, you know, and reasonably so. You know, we're afraid of being stained by the world, and sometimes that kind of reactionary posture can quickly turn into a caricature, and can quickly turn into some of the times, you know, some of the seasons in Christianity's history where we've become very sort of insular and isolated and disconnected from cultural dialogue. So. On the other hand, I think there's a propensity, and I've seen this in my generation as people have sort of embraced some doctrines like Christian freedom, where they're so eager to engage with the world, they're so eager to express their freedom that they act like, you know, the way I describe it in the books, is they act like over-anxious teenagers. They can't wait to get out and know how far can I go, how much can I watch, how much can I see, and that attitude too can be, you know, just as problematic, if not more so.
Well, I guess that is, you know, maybe one of the challenges, isn't it? I mean, it's always pretty hard to square, it seems, with, you know, Philippians 4:8. I mean, whatever is good and true and right and honorable, and we think on these things. And, you know, Paul's also talking about, you know, have nothing to do with, you know, coarse language or those. I mean, it's hard to, I mean, I guess honestly, if we step back and look at it, say, well, we're not going to get particularly godly presentation of anything when we're watching today's film and TV, are we?
Well, I think a couple of things that come to mind. One is, language is contextual, of course, and so it's a cultural phenomenon in terms of the way language shifts and changes, and what offends one generation becomes, common parlance in another's. And that's not to justify it. It's just simply to say I think there's a contextual issue there that matters. I think with Paul's words in Philippians 4:8 too, one of the things to realize is that what's true and what's right and what's good, if we're telling stories about human life, they're going to in order to be true, they're going to at least have to acknowledge the presence of darkness and of tragedy and of fallenness and brokenness. That's not an excuse, that's not a license to go and watch anything indiscriminately. But I think the challenge for Christians, particularly who are creating culture, who are making films and telling stories, the challenge is, in order to be truthful, how do we portray, how do we discuss, how do we tell stories about the darkness that's in the world in a way that is honest and in a way that is acceptable in the Christian community, who at times can be very reactive against any portrayal of darkness or of sin. And again, I think a great example, a great line or a great model for us is the scriptures. Scriptures themselves are at times very violent. At times, there's a godly, erotic nature to the book of the Song of Solomon. And so it becomes sort of the measuring stick of how do we tell true stories, true and good stories, that again at times deal with the darkness of a broken and fallen world.
It's and I know you kind of addressed that, about the fall, how we, clearly, we don't have to look very far to see that there's evidence of fallenness around us. But a couple of the shows you mentioned, one of them I thought we should just maybe talk about is, you have a section talking about Flipping the Fall, and that's talking about the Truman Show. And for those that remember that one, that maybe just use that as an example about how, again, these films and shows are trying to present a message in a fresh new way.
Yeah, I think the Truman Show is a fascinating show, and I think what's interesting in the film is in many ways it presents a very common understanding in the world around us of who God is and how God works, and the main characters, of course, Truman, and he lives in this essentially a giant film studio. He was adopted by a corporation and turned into a 24-hour reality television show about his life, where everything else in his world is fake and overseen by Christoph, this character played by Ed Harris, who sort of is the malevolent overlord of the world. And what the film really ultimately celebrates is, I think allegorically, what it ultimately celebrates is Truman's rejection of God, rejection of a world that of providence, or rejection of God's oversight and authority. But it does so in a way that I think simultaneously gives us a pretty distorted vision of who God is and how He works. And it's not to say, okay, so don't watch the Truman Show. I think it's a great example of a show that we can watch and we can recognize, oh, this is the way our friends, our neighbors, the people around us are thinking about the nature of God and the nature of our relationship with Him, the nature of sort of the way they see God's oversight of creation as oppressive and domineering and something to be resisted.
In fact, that that seems like maybe it's kind of an ongoing theme, isn't it? In many of the stories and the TV shows and the films you reviewed, I guess the whole emphasis on rebellion. I mean, that rebellion is is championed many times, right? That we're
it is. Well, and we've been telling, human beings have been telling that story for a long time. I mean, you go all the way back to the Greek myth of Prometheus. Ultimately, the Promethean myth is, Prometheus stole fire from the gods. And so it's original sin, but it's the idea of original sin being told in this framework of now we have power. Now we are, like Satan's words to Eve in the garden, do this and you'll be like God. The Promethean myth is the illusion that by rebelling against God, by rebelling against our authorities, we're actually more powerful as a result. And what the scriptures, challenge us on, is they challenge us to say, no, now you're broken. Now things aren't the way that they're supposed to be. Now you face thorns and thistles and this curse that spreads from one end of creation to another. So I think it's definitely a theme that you see told in stories again and again. And one of my favorite storytellers of all time is Garrison Keillor. And whenever he tells the story of Genesis 3, whenever it comes up in any of his storytelling, he always kind of tells it with that myth, this thing we had to do in order to become more interesting and more powerful and more creative as a result of it, which is clearly a twist on what's actually taken place.
Because there are... I don't want to say the stories are twisted, but I think in the best sense is that they're, we don't have the whole picture through our story. So it seems like we do need to be discerning, right? To know that,
absolutely.
These stories are incomplete. What are your recommendations for building that discernment?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think whenever it comes to a Christian engaging culture, whether we're talking about TV and movies or music or even really in how we're building relationships with our friends and neighbors, we need, the two gifts God has given us to discern our way through it are God's Word and God's Church. The Church provides a community that can help us to watch our life and our doctrine and can help us to see in the ways that we're tempted and pulled and can speak up when they say, hey, your language is changing or your behavior is changing or I don't like the way that you're talking about X, Y, and Z. Like, what's going on there? What's the influence in your life? And then, of course, God's Word, speaks truth and speaks clearly and will challenge and confront us on the ways that we consume all kinds of culture. And so, yeah, there's no doubt to me that we need to be discerning. And I think the trick is, I do believe that there's something to be said about conscience, and there's something about our context. And I always warn folks in my church when they say, hey, this friend of mine, I had a question about this last night where somebody was saying, hey, my roommate thinks that the stuff I watch is too dark. What should I say to them? And I said, you should say thank you, because they're speaking truth into your life and they're concerned for you and you should consider, you should listen and consider what they have to say. Your job is not to press them to violate their conscience. Your job is to listen when they say, hey, I'm worried about yours.
Hmm. We'll come back and maybe pick up on that as well, because there are lots of maybe darker shows out there. If it's Breaking Bad or The Walking Dead, sure, or Quentin Tarantino, I mean, in any number of those. I know you address some of those in this book, and so we'll come back and reflect on that. Also, I want to get some thoughts about got a couple questions waiting. We'll get to and get a word about maybe making film and television shows, how we might have some positive influence there in this world of influential media. We're talking today about the stories we tell, and through this book we have an opportunity to understand the one great story, the longings of the human heart, and what God is about in our communities, in our world. My guest today is Mike Cosper, who is a pastor of one of the founding pastors of Sojourn Community Church in Louisville. You can join the conversation with your phone call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we'll continue with Mike in just a moment on Connecting Faith. Two past the hour, talking today about the stories we tell, how TV and movies long for and echo the truth. That's the title of a new book from Mike Cosper, who serves as a pastor of worship and arts at Sojourn Community Church in Louisville, where he's one of the founding pastors, contributes regularly to the Gospel Coalition blog, writing about worship and culture. He's also authored a book called Rhythms of Grace and co-authored the book Faith Mapping. And, Mike, before the break, we were talking a little bit about just, you know, some of those maybe darker shows, and you addressed that sort of shadow and darkness. But shows like Breaking Bad or others, Quentin Tarantino's movies, I mean, get awards. How can we look at that? Is there anything redemptive in that?
Sure. I think Tarantino's a fascinating one to look at because let me preface this with this little caveat. I try to say this real clearly in the book, and I want to say it clearly here too. I don't address these necessarily because I'm saying Christians need to watch these. I'm interested in them more from the perspective of what are people saying and what are the questions that are being asked that are revealed in these stories. And Tarantino is a great example of this because, you know, his last two films, really the last two films plus the Kill Bill film is another great example of this. Tarantino is so interested in the topic of justice and vengeance and revenge. All of his films, you know, the Kill Bill movies open up with begin with the murder of the bride's husband. And then the background of the other two films, the World War II film is the background of the Holocaust. And then Django Unchained has the background of slavery. And so in each of these cases, there's this horrible injustice that sets the stage for everything that happens in his movies. And I think what he's trying to give his audiences is an emotional experience of making that right, of righting a wrong, of creating justice through these sort of violent fantasies that are horrifically violent. And again, that's why I give the caveat. I'm not recommending the film to everybody. I'm simply saying what's the question he's asking. And for Christians, I think we can look at what he's doing and say there's something in the human heart that when we see injustice, when we see slavery, when we see the Holocaust, when we see violent murders on the streets, there's something in us that cries out that someone has to make this right. This there has to be justice in the world. I mean, you see it as early as the death of the story of Cain and Abel, the death of Abel, where Abel's blood cries out from the ground. Blood cries out. It speaks in a way, and I think we can look to that and we can go, yes, you're craving justice, but ultimately Tarantino's films fail in that the violence done against the Nazi war criminals and the violence done against slave owners and the violence done against the bride's enemies and the Kill Bill films, it's never enough. It doesn't satisfy. And vengeance would only, you know, in the real world, vengeance would only lead to more vengeance and more bloodshed. Something had to happen. But it also reminds us when we think of it in the light of the cross, we remember, man, the cross was a horrifically violent and bloody way to make right the wrongs of the world. So I think there's a lot of spiritual implications to the questions that Tarantino is asking, even as he goes about it in a way that's gory and profane.
And one could probably say there's maybe the more unjust our world gets, maybe that's part of the reason why there's more and more maybe darker representations of it. Right?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Let's take a call from Chris, who's listening in Faith 90.5 in Duluth. And Chris has some thoughts about, gospel influence in media. Chris, go ahead. You're on with Mike Cosper.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic what y'all are doing, not only for the book that's been written, but your exposure of your station for that book and our Christian perspective and things. And I'm in the middle of, towards the end, actually, right now, shooting a full-length feature film, my first of seven, that we're shooting in the cities and in Duluth, and low budget, but it's a fantastic note about Christianity and what it takes, and that you're just common people, but we're hitting right in the middle without, you know, overthrowing it or, you know, throwing a Bible at them. We're getting the word across to them that Jesus spoke, and it's just working fantastic for what we have. I mean, for such a low budget and all, and God's definitely behind us. But I'm really interested in so many more people getting on the bandwagon and doing things like that and supporting these movies and these books and your show, your talk show, et cetera. So I'm very, very happy that we're all going in that direction to get to people in that respect.
Appreciate your call, Chris. In fact, Mike, I know you addressed that. You have a word to Christian filmmakers. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think I'm excited about what you're doing. I'm glad you're doing it. I think that Christians, my encouragement to Christians in the book is to as much as anything else, really try to tell great stories. Really try to grab a hold of people's imaginations, because I think sometimes it's a temptation to put the message up front in our films. And and ultimately the way stories work, the message tends to get to us in a way that's more subversive than that. And so I'm excited. It does seem like there's a growing movement of Christians that are making films and trying to tell stories. And I think it can only be good as time goes by and we learn to make films, and we make more and more and we get better at it as we do it. So congrats, Chris, and good luck to you.
Yeah, and in fact, I think you said just keep doing it, right? Even if it's with your iPhone camera or something. I mean,
that's
you're
right.
just the practicing the art of it is going to help.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you listen to so many great filmmakers, and they tell the stories of how they, how they learned to make movies, and they started on, shooting on Super 8 or the home VHS camcorder. I mean, I remember being a kid and getting together with the kids in my neighborhood and getting a VHS camcorder and shooting these horrifically stupid movies in backyards. But it was what we did, It was because we loved movies and we wanted to play around with it. And I think that whether you're doing that or whether you've got a full budget, full production film with a full crew, the experience of doing it is going to be the best way to learn and the best way to move things forward. So
is it important to is it not necessarily have the gospel up front? I mean, that those were too much like Billy Graham films probably to have impact, I suppose. But do you need to include several aspects of the bigger story, or is it just about asking the questions? What's the most important?
Sure. Well, different media has different audiences. I think this is a great question that Christians need to wrestle with. So I have a friend who's a rapper, his name is Shy Lin, and brilliant artist, and he does he's one of these reformed hip hop guys, and just brilliant at what he does. His songs are rich and they're theologically dense, and his goal is to make music that speaks to the church in a way that's about building disciples and being very clear. And then there are other Christian artists whose work is more who don't so much feel called to be sort of in the pastoral role of building disciples, but more feel called to be songwriters in the way that some people might feel called to be an architect or feel called to be a plumber. And so their Christianity informs their work from coming out of who they are, even if it's not necessarily every single song is overtly and apparently about a biblical topic or a theological topic. I think the same thing's true for Christians who want to make films. I think that there's a similar kind of tension that needs to be navigated. There'll be some people who want to do overtly Christian films that are about evangelizing or discipling, and that's good. We need people doing that. But we also, I think there's a broader world of film and creativity that Christians can be a part of and be working in the part of where their faith will nonetheless and should nonetheless inform their work, even if the work's not necessarily overtly evangelistic or about the purpose of building disciples. And great example of that to me is sort of the contrast between the work of C.S. Lewis and the work of Tolkien, both of whom took their faith very seriously. Lewis's work tends to be more overt, more allegorical, directly, more easy to see, where the gospel informs what he was doing, whether it was in the Space Trilogy or the Narnia stories. Where Tolkien's faith certainly informed his work, but I mean, he says outright in his his introduction to the paperback series that he hates allegory and that he never wanted to write one. And so his faith certainly informed those myths, and you see beautiful redemptive themes throughout the Lord of the Rings series, but they inform it from the background more than the foreground.
Well, you know, speaking of those, if you think about Lewis and Tolkien, Frank, one of our regular callers, wanted to know what you think about the science fiction genre. And, of course, Lewis wrote some on that as well. But talk maybe a bit about that, and are there, if that also represents some of the longing for the big story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, sci-fi is a massive genre. It covers a huge ground. But I think there's wonderful stuff that's been done. Again, Lewis's example of the space trilogy is one of my absolute favorite series of books I've ever read. And what science fiction allows us to do is it allows us to kind of imagine where history might go, where technology might go, and then I think what's interesting to me about sci-fi, particularly when it kind of gets into the realm of the unknown and the realm of aliens and monsters in space and all of this kind of stuff, I think you see in that this brooding sense. I'd say the same thing about horror films as well. When we tell these stories that have all of this darkness and this sense of the unknown, of something mysterious hovering in the background, I think that too kind of reveals something about the human heart that's aware of the fact that there's something in the background of our world that's dark and that's dangerous and that we need to be nervous about. And of course, the scriptures tell us that the devil prowls like a roaring lion, and that there's principalities and powers and demonic forces at work in the world, and that they're the source of this tremendous evil. I think in our storytelling, we sort of are fooling around with ways of trying to kind of come to grips with that sense that there's something wrong with the world. But the genre as a whole, you know, there's lots of great stuff. I mean, the Star Wars series, there's some things that Christians would object to, but there's also these redemptive themes of self-sacrifice. And what's fun about science fiction is that it's a broad enough genre that within it you can find romance stories and tragedy stories and redemption stories all mixed in together.
Talking about the stories we tell, how TV and movies long for and echo the truth. And you might have a TV or a movie, a TV show or a movie in mind, and want to get some perspective on that, some reflection with Mike Cosper, who is a pastor of worship and arts at Sojourn Community Church in Louisville, Kentucky, where he's one of the founding pastors. He also contributes regularly to the Gospel Coalition blog and author of Rhythms of Grace. And I feel I feel a whole new level of excitement building for the final segment of the show. I don't know. We're probably going to go where no man's gone before here in the next 60 seconds, so stay tuned. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 877-933-2484. It's 46 past the hour. Talking today with Mike Cosper. We're talking about TV and movies and how they, how TV and movies long for and echo the truth. We're talking about the big story, God's story. The book title is called "The Stories We Tell." Mike is a pastor of worship and arts at Sojourn Community Church, Louisville, Kentucky. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross at the controls, and Ted, we're just kind of talking a little bit about using movie clips in sermons or
something. I've noticed that a lot of, even visiting different congregations, that pastors like to maybe play a clip from a film to amplify build up a point and to really use that as an analogy. And just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why pastors do it for certain. It's not something that I do often. Myself when I preach, or we do much at Sojourn. I'm not a huge fan of it because I feel like it often kind of feels it feels strange to me to do that in the midst of a worship service. Though I've referenced films often, just sort of in my own speaking about it. I'm not a big fan of sort of the movie clip illustration, but I definitely get why people do it, because there's such a power in the moving image. I mean, it's a powerful way to kind of communicate and connect emotionally. My tendency, I mean, I'm a fairly, particularly when it comes to to what happens within the worship service. I'm a fairly conservative guy. I definitely like contemporary music, but I tend to sort of say, well, let's let the word speak and the pastors speak and be prophetic but at the same time, that's a preference thing. I don't think that that's a thus saith the Lord thing by any means. And I get why people do it. It's a powerful medium.
Let's take a call from Alan, listening in St. Paul on line two. Alan, you're on with Mike Custer. Go ahead.
I just want to talk about the Superman movies. I think it's movie three where he's been gone and comes back, and Lois Lane wrote a book and got a Pulitzer Prize. And in her book, she says, Superman says, "Do I read your book? And I see that you said in your book, the world isn't screaming or doesn't need another savior." And he says, with my super hearing, he says, "Well, I can hear them screaming more every day for another savior." And I thought, that was really pretty blunt. Boom, there it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Superman myth as a whole, it's a powerful allegory for our sense that the world needs a savior, for sure. And a very real sense that the whole hinge of history really is going to come down to one guy who's going to save the world. And you see that in a lot of stories. You see that in The Matrix, you know, this idea of Neo, he's the one that's been prophesied about for all these years, and he's going to come back and save the world. But Superman is a rich myth in terms of the parallels to Christianity. You know, his father sent him, you know, to show Earth a better way so they weren't destroyed by their own sin and corruption. It's a beautiful allegory for sure.
Talk about heroes and messiahs in your book, the stories we tell. But you also talk about some of the less heroic. And I'm thinking about save us from ourselves. And you do have a chapter on Honey Boo Boo. Didn't know if there was anything you want to just mention about that. There was a good quote from C.S. Lewis, which I'll let you get to and try and salvage it, maybe.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I think that chapter, I mean, what I'm trying to get at in that chapter is why would someone subject themselves to the rigors of reality television, of putting themselves on display in front of the whole world? And so I think that the name of that chapter is Kim Kardashian, Honey Boo Boo, and C.S. Lewis on the Weight of Glory.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to get at there is what Lewis illuminates so beautifully is that there is this deep hunger in all of us. We want for glory, for praise, for recognition, for someone to tell us that we're good. And of course Lewis, you know, in that famous quote where he says, you know, we're far too easily pleased. I think that speaks to reality television. I think it speaks to social media. We crave glory. We crave to be put on display and for people to think that we're beautiful or we're wonderful or just to be famous. We think that's going to make us happy. And the reason it fails is because we fail to realize that longing is a longing that only the voice of God, who in redemption can look at us and call us his children again and can say, well done, good and faithful servant. Only in him is that longing ultimately satisfied. But now, I mean, in this age of, again, reality TV, social media culture, there's a lot of different ways to try to get at scratching that itch. I think unfortunately someone would, you know, you look at the sort of the Honey Boo Boo thing, the phenomenon of it, and it's this family who really gets mocked on TV. Why would you subject yourself to that? Well, because we long for fame. We long for a kind of glory, and even though that's a broken glory, it's an attempt, albeit a failed one, at scratching that itch.
By the way, I've got a couple copies of Mike's book to give away. We'll do it at the end of the hour. I should have mentioned that, but if you'd like to sign up for that, we'll do a little drawing. You can call us at 877-933-2484. It's interesting, this sort of longing for glory. One of the chapters sort of caught my attention. I hadn't really thought about it, I guess, in terms of a big theme, but the theme of frustration. And that certainly describes where much of life is lived, right, in that kind of those in-between times of frustration. Talk a bit about that as film and TV show it.
Yeah, the example I spend a lot of time on in that chapter is the television show The Wire, which was a crime drama that takes place in Baltimore. And what David Simon, the creator of The Wire, what he does in that show is he really kind of goes through several different major institutions that are supposed to kind of provide structure and justice and in our society, and he really just shows you how every single one of them is corrupt. The first one's kind of our criminal justice system. There's a one season deals with politics, one season deals with education, one season deals with media, and you know, one deals with sort of the disappearing middle class. And what he's getting at is how deeply broken our structure, our communal structure really is, and how corruption runs from the very top to the very bottom. And it's a profoundly interesting show because you see, you know, he gets you into the lives of the cops, and the cops, of course, are fallen human beings just like anyone else. He gets you into the lives of the criminals, and he shows you their humanity and how they're in many ways their criminality is birthed out of this sort of desperate this sense of desperation, and it humanizes those that we would often villainize, and it shows you the brokenness of those that we would often see as heroes, and it really leaves you scratching your head, going, man, this is so frustrating. It's all meaningless. Like, how on earth do you possibly redeem this depth of frustration and despair? And so I think my goal in that chapter was to really sort of parallel it with what I think you see in the book of Ecclesiastes, which tells us, you know, under the sun, apart from God, that our life, our efforts in life are pretty frustrating and pretty meaningless.
And yet, that, you know, one of those key verses is 3:11, right? That I mean, there is eternity in all of our hearts, right? And so we know that this isn't all there is.
That's right. And so I think so much of our – I love that verse because I think it really speaks to where so many of our stories come from. We have a sense of the transcendent. We have a sense that there is something more to life. But apart from God revealing himself to us, we don't see the end from the beginning. And so we spin out stories. We spin out tales. We make all of these different efforts to try to explain why the world is the way that it is. And it's birthed from that eternal longing, that desire that God has given us, that ultimately finds its satisfaction in knowing him.
I guess, you know, as I read the book, I kept thinking, well, you know, I don't know if I have to keep looking for trying to find signs of hope and redemption in some of these shows, because I just know I'm going to ultimately be disappointed, and you know, it's probably not really going to do me any good. I mean, you know, are we digging through the muck to find a diamond, or should we just kind of ignore it completely?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think some of it has to do with where you live and who you're in conversation with. And I think for a lot of my church members and for me in particular, for when I'm in conversation with a lot of my neighbors, this is where those folks live. These are the, you know, I talked to somebody yesterday who he and his wife had a free weekend, and they literally spent 20 hours watching The Blacklist over the weekend, binge watching it on Netflix. And so I think, you know, I think this is where our friends and neighbors are living. They're consuming these stories day and night, and it may not mean, you know, it certainly doesn't demand that we spend 20 hours every weekend watching TV. I sure hope it doesn't. I do think it's helpful in the sense of, man, if this is where our people, this is where our friends and neighbors live, and these are the stories that our world is telling us, how can we have an intelligent dialogue with the things they're fascinated about and wrestling with and talking about in the stories that they're telling. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a context thing. I mean, again, if you're in a community where no one's watching Mad Men, where no one's watching these shows, then, you know, I mean, I certainly wouldn't go overseas on missions and start handing out a copy of this book, because it speaks to a very specific culture and a very specific context. And so, I think that's what it boils down to. If it's helpful to the degree of understanding where our friends and neighbors are conversing about and obsessing over, then great. But my goal is certainly not to encourage people to simply mindlessly consume more and more television, for sure.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't work so well with your pastoral perspective, would it? So yes, so, yeah.
Right.
Like, we got just a few seconds left. What are you blogging about these days at the Gospel Coalition? Do you remember what you wrote last?
I'm trying to remember what I wrote. The last thing I wrote that published online was something over at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Committee's blog.
Sure.
on some stuff on race.
Okay.
We're really wrestling with trying to become a multi-ethnic congregation here in the heart of Louisville's urban core, and we've been preaching on it, and we've been learning a lot of lessons. So I wrote that there, and I wrote about Lecrae's new record, actually, over at the Gospel Coalition blog. Was my last post, which is a great record, for sure.
Check it out. Mike Cosper, who contributes regularly to the Gospel Coalition blog and other places, writing on worship and culture. He's a pastor of worship and arts at the Sojourn Community Church in Louisville, where he's one of the founding pastors. And he's written this new book called The Stories We Tell, How TV and Movies Long For and Echo the Truth. It's published by Crossway, and you can catch a podcast online at our website, myfaithradio.com.